Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Friday, November the 20th. A very good morning and welcome to this edition of Africa Link. My name is Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, the African Union lodges complaints against the International Criminal Court, accusing the court that it is biased towards Africa in its prosecutions.
The ICC essentially is actually a colonial court. The back of the ICC is this belief that Africans are incapable of self-management, a view shared by many African elites who are shallow and short-sighted.
We also hear from a human rights expert who thinks otherwise.
The ICC's job is to be an independent court, to get to the truth of the matter, to have fair proceedings, and to bring accountability for horrific crimes wherever they're committed and whomever they're committed by.
And children's rights organizations from Eastern and Southern Africa launch a campaign to fight child abuse.
We feel that states in the region should take responsibility for preventing violence against children. One policy step is to be very clear that physical punishment of children in all spaces become outlawed.
These stories and more coming in the next 25 minutes. Stay tuned.
Top story.
The African Union, or AU, has lodged complaints against the International Criminal Court, or ICC, for focusing too much on African leaders. The AU says the ICC is biased towards Africa in prosecuting those accused of committing war crimes and crimes against humanity. Ethiopia's Foreign Minister Tedros Ghebreyesus led the AU delegation at the 14th session of the Assembly of State Parties. This assembly is an annual meeting of the 123 countries that signed up to the Hague-based court's founding statute. Andrew Mwenda is a political commentator in Uganda and has been telling my colleague Isaac Mugabe that the ICC is a tool of Western powers.
If a government refers the case to the ICC, and along the way the government changes its mind and feels like it should be withdrawn from ICC, the ICC should respect it, because ICC tries cases not of a direct criminal nature, but criminality resulting from political contestation. If African governments refer any case to ICC, they should also reserve the right to say, look, we have now agreed to use our internal political processes to achieve internal political reconciliation. And I think placing political reconciliation above criminal prosecution is very important for promoting future stability.
But there is also a cross-section of Africans who are in favor of the court because it is the only way Africa's tyrants can come face-to-face with justice for crimes they committed in order to end the culture of impunity. Your thoughts on this, please.
I think that those Africans who think like that do not understand the fact that managing internal relations of a country is very, very different from managing a normal criminal case. Because, you see, the conflicts in Africa from which the ICC derives the crimes to charge people with are not crimes in the mainstream sense of the word that they went and murdered somebody. They are crimes resulting from political contestation. To resolve those problems of internal political contestation requires, in most cases, placing the interest of political reconciliation above criminal prosecution. I know there are many Africans who feel helpless and they think that our leaders should be tried by the International Criminal Court. Those Africans don't understand the value of independence and the importance of the concept of sovereignty, that the internal political problems of poor countries cannot be adjudicated upon by a court geographically located far away, involving people who are politically removed from the conditions and issues which they are adjudicating. It just cannot work.
The AU in the past has petitioned the UN Security Council to review the tribunal's workings, but the Security Council didn't react. Why do you think it didn't?
Because, you see, the ICC essentially is actually a colonial court. The back of the ICC is this belief that Africans are incapable of self-management, a view shared by many African elites who are shallow and short-sighted. You remember that the biggest violators of international law, the biggest violators of crimes against humanity and genocide, are not actual African leaders. Look at what the United States, France, and Britain have done to the world. The United States has been bombing Yemen, Somalia, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Syria, Iraq, How come George Bush, Dick Cheney, Tony Blair, David Cameron, Nicolas Sarkozy have not been called to the court? The African Union says, no, this court has an agenda against Africans and against African leaders. It's a colonial court that wants the solutions for Africa to be located in the international system. That court can only accentuate the problems that we face. It can only deepen political antagonism and political divisions.
Andrew Mwenda, a political commentator and publisher of a Uganda newspaper, The Independent. Now, let's listen to the other side of the argument. Elizabeth Evanson is a researcher with the rights group Human Rights Watch.
Claims that the ICC is unfairly targeting African leaders for prosecution really lack a basis in fact. While the ICC's current investigations are all within Africa, if you look at what happened, it was actually because a number of African governments have asked the ICC to step in, or because the UN Security Council, including African members of the council, have asked the ICC to step in. So it's not the case that the ICC is a biased institution. At the same time, I think the reason why that criticism has gained some traction or may have some appeal is because it's true that there are double standards at work in the delivery of international justice. It's unfortunately true that officials of powerful countries, officials of countries allied with powerful countries, are less likely to face justice than officials of some other countries. And that's a double standard that I think we all need to be concerned about and that we all need to work to erase. But it doesn't undermine the importance of the ICC's ability to act where it can and to deliver justice for victims where it can do that.
Kenya says the court case against its Vice President William Ruto risks rekindling ethnic tensions. Do you think the court could take this into consideration and withdraw the case against Ruto for the sake of peace in Kenya?
When we look at what happened in Kenya in 2007, 2008, it's clear that it was actually impunity for past cycles of election violence that was really at the root cause of triggering the killings, the displacement that affected so many in Kenya and so many continue to be affected by to this day. The ICC's job is to be an independent court. Its job is to investigate, to get to the truth of the matter, to have fair proceedings, and to bring accountability for horrific crimes wherever they're committed and whomever they're committed by. So that's the job that it needs to do, and it needs to be left to do that, and for the judicial process against the deputy president to be able to run its independent course.
The ICC recently warned member states not to compromise its independence. Why do you think it took this defensive position?
I think the ICC's prosecutor, its president, its registrar are sending a very clear message about the importance of the ICC being left to do its work without political interference. As we discussed, the ICC has been accused of unfairly targeting certain countries' leaders with investigations or having a biased approach. The best defense against what we think are claims that really do lack any basis in fact, the best defense is for the court to be acting independently, to be seen to be acting independently. And for that reason, we're very concerned that states in their ICC meeting this week also stand up and reinforce the message sent by the court's own officials.
Do you envisage a time when the ICC and Africa will reconcile and improve on their frosty relationship?
I think it's important to understand that there are lots of different voices and lots of different views about the ICC within Africa. We work all the time with activists, human rights defenders from Africa, working in Africa. We are working with these individuals, and they have been quite clear in saying that the ICC is needed. The ICC is needed to address the rights of victims to truth and to justice, and that it's right that it has stepped in because there aren't any other avenues for justice in many of these cases.
Elizabeth Evanson from Human Rights Watch.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
Tanzania's President John Magufuli on Thursday appointed a former junior minister as the country's new prime minister. The surprise choice of Majaliwa Kassim Majaliwa is the biggest decision taken by Magufuli since he assumed office earlier this month. Majaliwa served as Deputy Minister of Local Government under recent past President Jakaya Kikwete. President Magufuli is expected to announce his full cabinet in the coming days. Our correspondent in Arusha, Charles Ngereza, has been telling Isaac Mugabe more about the new prime minister and how Tanzanians reacted to the announcement.
Really, this has been quite a surprise. The newly appointed prime minister, who have been also already passed by the parliament to be the fifth government prime minister, was quite a low-profile guy. He's a teacher by profession who held also some other official and political positions in the CCM government for the past 15 years. But it was a really big surprise for Magufuli's choice, because many people did not expect that this guy, who is not very much known, could just get this position, which many people were expecting, and even mentioned some other people who had qualities probably that Tanzanians may want to see helping Magufuli to reform this country.
Just like you mentioned, Parliament approved him with nearly three quarters of the vote in his favor. Is this a sign that the president wants his policies to be implemented without so much hurdles by choosing Majaliwa?
Yeah, there's a lot of interpretation of this move for Magufuli. One is Magufuli is trying to break the groups in his party, CCM, which has been for a long time divided in groups. So choosing this man who is not very famous, who is not aligned to any group in the party, is a sign that he wants now to unite his party members together and those who are in government. Because you find that the people who have been thought to have taken this position are people who had groups in the party. And also, there is a question of balancing power in the whole country. Like now, we are having a prime minister for the first time from the southern Tanzania, and having a president also from the Lake Zone for the first time. So he's trying to play this card so that he can really unite his party together, and also to show Tanzanians that he's really ready to reform his party and the government also, so that he may be able to fulfill the promises that he has given when he was asking to get in office.
What have ordinary Tanzanians been saying about the president's choice of Majaliwa Kassim Majaliwa as his prime minister?
There are mixed feelings in regards to this move now, because the people were expecting their names that were passing in the newspapers around, in the media here. So it is quite a surprise. Looking at the man himself, that he is not very much known and he has not really done things which people would just say, yes, this man, because we have his record, we know him, then he is going to help our president.
Charles Ngereza in Arusha, Tanzania.
Human rights.
Now, numerous children's rights organizations from Eastern and Southern Africa have launched a campaign dubbed Action on Violence Against Children campaign. As Tuzo Komalo reports from Johannesburg, where the launch took place this week, these organizations are now challenging stakeholders, including government, to intensify their efforts to protect children and also take drastic action against perpetrators.
The launch takes place at a time when incidents of child abuse are reportedly rising in various countries. Such abuses include corporal punishment, child marriages, sexual abuse, child labor, and other forms. Statistics from some African countries reveal shocking figures of sexual, physical, and emotional abuse of children. According to statistics revealed by these organizations, one in five girls and one in 10 boys in Zambia have experienced childhood sexual violence. In Malawi, two out of five girls report that their first incident of sexual intercourse was unwanted. Seven out of 10 children in Tanzania report experience of physical violence, while in South Africa, 84% of children's relatives or family friends are the perpetrators of reported child rape. children rights groups want such abuses to end immediately, says Wessel Vandenberg, a child rights and positive parenting portfolio manager at the Sonke Gender Justice.
We feel that states in the region should take responsibility for preventing violence against children. One policy step is to be very clear that physical punishment of children in all spaces become outlawed.
The United Nations Children's Fund representative to Swaziland, Rachel Odede, says they are worried that in most high-level summits of world leaders, political and economic issues often overshadow the discussions on children's rights.
As leaders of the world talk about trade or development, they cannot forget about children. Who will sustain it if children are not protected from violence, from illnesses? So leaders ought to talk about children.
According to Child Helpline International Africa, 35% of calls received are from children who are victims of violence and abuse, 23% are of physical punishment, and 17% are victims of sexual violence. Dumisile Nala, National Executive Officer for Child Helpline South Africa, says all hands must be on the deck to address this problem.
We realize that children are our future, so we need to invest in them. We need cooperation between government, business, civil society and communities to address issues of violence against children.
Other international organizations involved in the campaign include the African Union through its Social Affairs Department within the African Union Commission, Plan International and Save the Children.
To Zokumalo in Johannesburg, it is said where a road passes, development follows. That seems to be the case for the people who live along the new highway from Bamenda in Cameroon to Enugu in Nigeria. The road was built at a cost of more than $400 million. Local residents who live along this highway are happy that they can now send their produce to markets in the two countries. Moki Kinseka was at the border between Cameroon and Nigeria and filed this report.
Palm wine tapper Tikuba Andrew crosses over on his motorcycle from Fum village in Ebonyi State in southern Nigeria to Kendem village in southwestern Cameroon. He brings with him 20 liters of the wine he taps daily. That has been the 42-year-old's business for the past 14 years. He says his business has experienced a boom in the last 2 years thanks to the construction of the road network between Bamenda in Cameroon and Enugu in Nigeria.
We used to travel in months and go and sell at a very cheap rate. But now that the road has passed, people have come in and we are selling it very, very high now. And we are able to pay children in school.
I also met the person described by villagers here as the most enterprising farmer, Nya Gideon. He left his village of Boyo in northwest Cameroon a year ago, intending to seek a job and adventure in Nigeria, but he landed in the village of Bokwa in Cameroon, where he has developed a 30-hectare cocoa plantation. He was still expanding his farms on an unoccupied piece of land when I visited.
It's because of this new road that I've come, make, because where this road, the access, you must go to the farm. And that has made me to come right from Northwest in Boyo Division to come and work here.
8 years ago, Cameroon and Nigeria signed an agreement to build the road and got $423 million in funding from the African Development Bank. The road is part of the Trans-African Highway, conceived 30 years ago as a transcontinental link from Lagos to Mombasa. With the coming of the road, transport costs and poverty levels along the economic corridor have reduced significantly. Cameroon supplies Nigeria with food and farm produce, and Nigeria supplies Cameroon with basic commodities and clothing from its more advanced industry. But Cameroonian authorities are expressing fears that the road may degrade fast if truck drivers continue to load up with goods weighing more than the limit set. Peter Tiende, the most senior government official in Cameroon's Manyo division, says he has decided to stop heavy-duty trucks that exert pressure that can destroy the road's surface.
What do you want me to do? Should I allow such vehicles to destroy the road in the name of promoting economic activity? No, there is too much overloading of trucks, and the road construction company has complained. The African Development Bank that is financing the road has complained. The Minister of Public Works is complaining, so we cannot just stand by and do nothing.
There are also fears that increased traffic on the road may add to growing Boko Haram terrorism and increase insecurity in both Cameroon and Nigeria.
Moki Kinseka reporting.
Yossi.
And it's time for you to tell us your thoughts on the stories we've been covering. Privilege, Moose Vanhiri and Maya Schrader with this week's Yossi.
Today marks 1 week since the Paris terrorist attacks took place. There has been a lot of feedback on the story, particularly from African commentators, and here are just a few.
From northern Nigeria, Usman shared the sorrow with the French people, saying, "Our condolences to the people of France."
Nigeria, alongside Chad, Cameroon, and Niger, is currently fighting the Boko Haram Islamist militant group. On Tuesday, an attack in Yola, northeastern Nigeria, killed more than 30 people.
And prior to that attack in Nigeria, Murtala from Kano, another northern Nigerian city, which is often targeted by Boko Haram, commented on the attacks in the French capital, saying, "The Paris attacks show that terrorism has spread all over the world, and the time has come for all nations to combat it effectively."
There were some who felt France invited the attacks because of its many foreign military interventions. From Contagora, Nigeria, Como wrote, "I condemn the terror attacks in Paris, but the French have themselves to blame. They are involved in almost all the crises in Africa and the Arabian countries. I pray for an end to terror across the whole world."
Others accused Western nations of double standards in the wake of terrorist attacks. Commenting on Facebook, Godwill, one of them, singled out Germany, which was flying its flags at half-mast in mourning for the Paris attacks. Syria has suffered attacks which killed thousands. Go to Gaza, thousands of people have killed there. Look at Al-Shabaab in Somalia, they are killing thousands there. Why didn't Germany have the flag at half-mast in favor of Syria, Somalia or Gaza? Godwill asked.
Apart from the reactions to the Paris attacks, other stories we have been covering include the UN's adoption of a resolution condemning the violence in Burundi, plus Chad's decision to impose a state of emergency around Lake Chad.
On Burundi, Aliyu Muhammad from Yobe State, Nigeria, this one has been our regular contributor every week. He says Burundi's political crisis is getting worse. People are fleeing and killings are happening on a daily basis. However, the UN's threat of economic sanctions is totally immaterial.
Aliyu also had some words on Chad, saying, "We, the inhabitants of Borno, Yobe, and Adamawa states, lived under emergency rule for almost a year. But regular attacks have gotten worse, especially in Damaturu, where I live. Chad's emergency rule declaration is mediocre because many people strongly believe Chad has long been politicizing the war against Boko Haram. Many Nigerians think Boko Haram has hideouts somewhere in Chad, but now that they, Nigeria and Chad, have sorted things out, maybe the situation will be different."
Last but not least, we received this passionate plea from Samia Ali in Zanzibar. He wrote, "Please report on the news from Zanzibar. The human rights situation is not good. Please come to Zanzibar to report news."
Actually, Samar, I don't know if you are aware, but DW Kiswahili has been covering news from Zanzibar for years. Africa Link will definitely keep following the political process after the election results there were nullified. That's all for this week's Your Say.
Maya Schrader and Privilege Moose Vanhiri. Your Say will be back at the same time next week. There we come to the end of another week here on Africa Link. Crispin Mwakidi will be here with you on Monday, and do join him if you can. As always, thank you for listening. From me, Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany, I wish you a pleasant weekend.